some people on the conference line, as we are prone to do. We'll start the show just seeing who's on the line. And you guys on BBS are going to have to send your energy quietly to us as we do this. Okay, so I don't want everybody to talk at once. So let's just start off with the East Coast. Anybody? Let's start off with women on the East Coast.
Temperance from Massachusetts.
Temperance. Hi, Temperance.
How are you?
Fine, thank you. And who else is on the line from the East Coast? Women.
This is Donna in North Carolina.
Hi, Donna. Anyone else on the line? Women.
Emmy Toussaint.
Emmy. You know what? You're almost on the East Coast, right?
I know. I lived most of my life in the East Coast, so.
Oh, well, that'll call. Okay.
I lived in New York City for over 20 years.
On what street?
I lived in Throck's Neck by Long Island.
Huh?
Near Long Island.
I used to live in the East Village.
Uh-huh.
So, okay.
Okay.
Let's see, any more women on the East Coast? Are there any men on the East Coast? Are there any women on the West Coast?
Julian Federal Way, Washington.
Hey, Julie.
Hi.
Any other women on the West Coast?
Yes, in El Sherry, California.
Oh, wait a second. I heard somebody that said California. Who was that?
Sherry from California.
Sherry. Hey, Sherry, are you the person I keep having emails and asking for the show?
That's me.
Oh, great. What city are you in?
Pardon?
What city are you in?
Palm Springs.
Oh, okay. Super. Well, nice to have you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And any more women on the West Coast?
Beth, well, not on the West Coast.
Uh-oh, I heard two of you. Did I hear Beth?
Go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Wynn. It's Beth.
Beth in El Segundo?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Hello, Wynn. It's Frances in California.
Hi, Frances. Any other women on the West Coast?
Terry in California.
Terry. Are you in the parking lot of McDonald's?
Yes.
Those of you who are listening for the first time, Terry works in the legal office, and of course Terry is the person that made a great contribution to questions and answers with the Elohim, and if we're all in a good mood, they might say hello to us during the course of the call. Okay. Any other women on the West Coast?
I'm not on the West Coast. I'm in Arkansas.
In Arkansas. Is that Carol?
Yes, sir.
I'm starting to remember your name. Hey, Carol.
Oh, okay. How are you doing?
Very good.
Good.
What's the in Arkansas? Okay. Okay, now we have two cheaters. We have Emmy and Carol. And any other women on the West? Any other women on the West Coast? No more women on the. Any men on the West Coast? No men on the West Coast. Anybody in the middle?
Yeah, this is Alan Sedona.
Hey, Alan. Alan, you gotta balance all this male energy on this line, you know. And I.
Okay.
Glenda and Mesa.
Hey, Glenda.
Arizona. Hi.
Glenda and Mesa. Anyone else in the middle? Anyone in another country? Okay. All right. So we have everybody checked in. I'll bet we don't, though. I'll bet there's people that didn't.
Well, I'm not the middle or the East Coast. Sharon in West Virginia.
Mm-hmm. Sharon in West Virginia.
Yes.
What city in West Virginia?
Somersville.
Would you like to hear a great story about West Virginia?
Sure.
Doesn't West Virginia border on Pennsylvania?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Years ago, I was traveling around with my friend Jillian in our Volkswagen bus. And she and I were like hippie emissaries who had gone on the road to play music. And my hair was probably like 3 feet long, 2 feet long. And we were actually welcomed in, all over the country. Wherever, we would go into bars and wherever and play music. I was writing songs at the time. And one time, we were going from West Virginia to Pennsylvania in our Volkswagen bus, and we were going across a bridge, and I hit some kind of low-hanging something, and I had a tent on the top of my car. So it knocked the tent off, and so we had to pull over, and we were putting the tent back on the car, and these two or three guys that were hanging out there came over and said, "Hey, we need somebody to help paint our bridge. I see you guys got a tent. You're interested in a job?" we turned them down. But I never forgot that. But in any case, are you living in a city that borders on Pennsylvania?
No, we're central.
Yes, probably wasn't. Now, does that sound like something that could happen in West Virginia, or was that just something weird?
No, but about that time, it probably could have happened.
Probably could have. Okay.
Yeah, a lot of West Virginians were going out of state for work.
Uh huh. Okay. Did someone else check in?
Hey, Wayne. This is Vilma in Atlanta.
Vilma?
Yes.
In Atlanta. Okay. And anyone else? Just check in.
Yeah, Suzanne here.
Hey, Suzanne. Is Kathy there? I don't hear Kathy.
I don't know. I just got here.
I'm here, Wayne.
Oh, okay. Are you not speaking up anymore?
Well, I missed my part of the country, so I thought I would just kind of sit back.
Well, you're kind of on the East Coast, aren't you? Is it Tennessee?
Sort of in the middle.
Well, I have right, middle, left, okay?
Yeah. Okay, middle.
So listen, we have all these women on the line. I got to ask you ladies something. Do you understand men?
Yeah. They're a mutated race, I think.
How many of you understand that? Let's hear that.
Oh,
I think I do.
And
the question
in general,
is, do men
now
understand
thank
women?
You. Please hold while we.
How many of you don't understand that?
I don't.
How many of you think men understand you?
None.
Definitely not.
No.
How many of you have a man in your life or know a man that you really think understands you?
No.
None.
No.
With a little help, they do. With the help
no.
from
yes.
us.
My husband does pretty good.
He does pretty good?
Yep.
What do you think men don't understand?
Communication.
Communication?
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Alan. Are you on the line, Alan?
Yeah, I'm on the line.
Do you understand women, Alan?
No, can't say I do.
Okay. There's an honest that. Okay. So I should have you all educating Alan about understanding women, okay? All right. Well, it's an interesting topic, isn't it? I mean, I think there was a guy that wrote a book about that, John Gray.
Yeah.
Right. Men are from Mars, women are from Venus.
Venus.
Terry, were you speaking up? Terry, are you on the line? You didn't take a Big Mac break, did you? Hello, Terry. I got to make sure she's here because we might. Hello, Terry. Well, there goes our channel. In case anyone didn't notice.
I'm here.
Are you there?
I'm here. I was muted and I couldn't get unmuted.
Now, you know, the best way to mute your phone is that little button on the top, little silver button on the top. Do you see it?
Oh, that'll mute it?
Yeah.
And then you press it again to unmute it?
Yeah, and then you don't have to do star six. And it's just, you're doing...
Oh, okay.
You see the little silver button?
Yeah.
So, you weren't taking a Big Mac.
What?
You weren't... I thought you might be having a Big Mac.
I didn't hear you.
I thought you might be having a Big Mac.
Oh, yeah, that would be fun. I'm not, though.
Okay, so have you heard our topic here?
Yeah.
Do you understand men, do you think?
Well, I have a whole different view of it. I think that a person can come back as a man and then come back as a woman. And so I think that the whole question is much broader than do you understand men? It's do you understand human behavior?
Oh, you see that? We're getting a deep answer from it, right?
Yeah.
Now, do men understand you?
Probably not. But some people understand me more than others.
But not many people really understand you, right? You never go out with the lawyers after work and go to dinner and tell them what the Elohim has to say, right?
No, I don't do that anymore.
Oh, lawyers are a whole other breed of men anyway.
Oh, yeah. That's
right. I'll tell you a funny story. Years ago, Terry was living in Pasadena, and like the head lawyer in her firm, a very nice guy, and his wife, and his wife was kind of metaphysical, and they used to go every Friday night and meet with all the lawyers, local Pasadena restaurant, and I was in the middle of writing the book and was so, I actually did not know how to be around anybody without thinking about what I was doing. I was so blown away. Mute everybody for just a minute.
All callers are muted. To begin, this conference will now be recorded.
And now we started recording it so that in case anyone wants to listen to the replay and hear my story about hanging out with lawyers in a bar and grill, Pasadena. And so I don't think at that time nobody was talking to me. I wasn't involved in any personal communication with other realms. And I was just studying David Wilcox's website, and I was just blowing my mind on the Ra readings that were in there, and I went to dinner with hers, and all I would talk about is the book, and eventually I got uninvited to come to dinner anymore. Is that how you remember it, Terry?
Yeah, I remember that.
The worst thing was...
I remember that.
One of the lawyers was having a birthday, and all he was talking about was the reincarnation of Edgar Cayce. And
it was two people's birthday, and they wanted to have a birthday party, and you wouldn't stop. So they could have their party and their cake and their presents.
Well, those were the good old days, right?
Right. But you know what happened? They all ended up reading, or at least two of them ended up reading the books.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll bet maybe more will read it in the future. So, we're starting to talk about men and women. And I had all this stuff that I said, here's what I'm going to talk about tonight. And now my mind is blank, which is kind of cool because then I'll just go into a flow and who knows what will come out of my brain.
You might start channeling.
Start channeling? Well, is that what happens when you get really dumb and you don't know what you're going to say? That's when you start channeling?
Well, that's one way out of it.
I see. Okay, here's my treatise on men and women, okay? Oh, I hear somebody came in. Hello there. This is my take on it. Is, you know, a lot of times use this model where I refer to holograms, that we all have a hologram that we're connected to. And that as we move around with our physical bodies and we think, everything we do is changing our hologram. And our hologram is moving around. And there's an inherent, I won't say this is true for everybody, but for people that are on any kind of evolutionary path, they may not put it in these terms, but they want to expand their hologram. They want more, bigger awareness. Sometimes it starts with a mental idea, like they start studying something and it becomes an idea that's in the mind. But eventually, there's some kind of personal goal to expand your hologram. Now, you could say, if you said, I want to find God, that's a desire to expand your hologram. You could say, I want a higher consciousness. That's expanding your hologram. Because the hologram is a counterpoint to everything we are, as far as I can understand it. Because I can't see that hologram. But I reverse engineer things, and I watch things carefully, and I watch the people around this work, and I watch the changes go on, and I take very careful notes in my mind because it's the way that I learn that something is working or not working. And it's kind of like at a certain point in my life, one of the things that keyed me into this hologram idea, and I didn't call it a hologram then, but was there were certain patterns that I kept repeating. And whenever I would be with someone, a person that I was opening up to in my life, it could have been a relationship, it could have been anything, I watched this pattern keep happening. And I, at first, when I was younger, I used to think the world was against me, that nobody liked me. And that's how the pattern looked. It looked like I didn't relate to anybody, I didn't know how to relate to people, and that I would try to connect with somebody, and they would back off. And I looked at that, and eventually I said to myself, I think there's something in me that is causing that to happen. It's not them, although originally it seemed like it was them. And I kept looking inside myself for what that was creating that repetitive pattern. And eventually I came up with, it had to do with my father, and that my father made me feel no good all the time. And I had learned actually somewhat even later that my father had killed me in another lifetime. And somebody gave me a reading that I became certain was true. They told me a lifetime I had as a troubadour 1,000 years ago. And that my father killed me in that lifetime. And the way they described it was because he took my life, I had the option to be born into his family. And so I took that option. It seemed like it was a choice. And I learned to forgive him because I realized I made the choice. And that maybe if I didn't have that choice, I wouldn't have a life right now. That you have choices in other realms to come into this realm, but you need to have a choice of someone that you have energy with. There's some kind of energetic bond. Now, I think one of the reasons that family structures for many people are such a compelling drive to have children and grandchildren is because by the act of doing that, we end up on some subconscious level, and this is my idea. This is not something I've talked to those guys about, but it seems right to me. If they talk later, they can make a comment on it. But on some subconscious level, we know that if we create children, that we have the option to incarnate back into that same family as grandchildren or great-grandchildren, because it's the way the karma is paid back for bringing up children. And in fact, one of the people on the line has a granddaughter that we did a reading at one point, and they had said that that was her grandmother. So now I can see it working, that the same people come back and back and back through family structures. Now, I'm not sure that a family structure on one hand gives you a good place to come back on one hand. But on the other hand, it might be something that could pull you and lock you into a cycle of reincarnation. Because now, and this is all me thinking now, this, don't believe this because I'm not coming from asking these questions. That when you create that cycle, you create a bunch of lineage. And so then people anticipate you in the future. They want you to be their child, or they want you to be their mother. And so you keep coming back in reincarnation to fulfill that demand. And they can make a comment on that, because that's just, Terry, you should take notes. That's just my thought about it. But I think in my case, I was a really wild wanderer, and I didn't want to get hooked into family structures. I know this lifetime, I ran away from every opportunity to do that. Even though part of me was brought up, I as a kid, to think I should have a wife and have children and have a good job. And, you know, I had the same model. I came from a Jewish family, and it was a very strong model. And I mean, every Friday night, the family would all get together, and I would, you know, go with the family. But as soon as I left home, I really resisted. It wasn't very long that I resisted that idea, but I didn't know what I was supposed to do, except playing music and writing songs was a good outlet, because when I was younger, I remember writing songs. I was revisiting my troubadour past. And so I would write songs, and I would write all these romantic songs going in and out of relationships. But it's like, you know, I could only write the songs when I was moving in and going out because there would be the tension of what was going on. And I never would commit to a relationship. And probably the relationship I committed to early on mostly was with my friend who we traveled around in a Volkswagen bus playing music. And I met her when I was a student at Berkeley studying physics. And she was a person that was kind of a bohemian, artistic type, metaphysical type. And she was reading Edgar Cayce, and that's how I first got exposed to Edgar Cayce, through her. And I remember when we first met, I thought she was a wacko. She was into astrology, and I said, this can't work. Astrology can't possibly work. But then I started reading Edgar Cayce, and I would say that it was reading Edgar Cayce that gave me the idea that there was, in fact, something more. He existed. He was real. Anyone, if you haven't studied him, even if you just read some of his biographies on the Internet, there's no way he was not tapped into something that was very impossible in this realm. His abilities were impossible to explain by normal, you know, logical physics. So she introduced me to Edgar Cayce, and actually, she and I are still really, really good friends. And when I did my talk in Carlsbad a couple of weeks ago, her name is Jillian. She came to the talk, and she made me promise not to introduce her, which I honored. But she's just, I mean, now I see people in a much different way than I did then. And in fact, I don't think I saw people then. I couldn't see who they were. They were more, I guess this is like we talk about men and women. I saw her as an object. I saw her as someone that appreciated my music. I saw her that as someone that was fun to be with. But I didn't really see her. I didn't really see her deeply as a person. And maybe she saw me better than I saw her at that time. But in any case, that is not what I was planning on talking about. But if I talk about men and women, it's like, go back to this idea of holograms. I would say a male body has a certain hologram attached to it that moves into the male side of the universe. And a woman has a certain hologram that moves into the female side of the universe, the yin and yang. And, of course, this is a generalization, and it's certainly there's individual differences that would not apply. But in general, it's true. And so the nature of the connection between a man and a woman is like a big training ground to open each other up to the part of the hologram that they're missing. And that if you do it right, you will discover a huge expansion in your hologram as you learn to love, truly love, another person and incorporate their energy into your own space and vice versa. And that would be a really good relationship, people that use their relationship to do that. Unfortunately, so often it doesn't work because there's some kind of traditional implanted pattern that limits the expansion where people then go into a relationship to use each other. And use each other for sex, security, whatever, alleviating the fear of being alone. And so they miss the opportunity to have this kind of connection. Now, if you just take the idea of this, and if you happen to have a partner, and maybe some of you are already doing this and maybe didn't put it in those words, but if you have a partner and you start thinking about them in these terms, and you start tuning in to their energy form, their hologram, shut your eyes and just feel them, you will start to connect. And of course, when you have intimacy, you can't help but exchange energies at a very deep level. Well, yes, you can help it, but hopefully you're having an exchange of energies on a deep level. And that exchange mixes your energies and is actually teaching you to incorporate the energies of the other person. And, I would say when you have a love and then you lose a love, it's like you never lose the memory of the energy. And the thing about it is that if you think it's them, you'll keep trying to recreate another them. If you really take it in, you will now start to incorporate the yin and the yang into your own hologram and become more complete. And I would say you can know you're doing this. You can know you've mastered it when you can be either, depending on who you are with, and it could be a friend, it could be a lover, it could be anybody, that you don't care whether you're dominant or yielding. It doesn't matter. You'll do whichever you need to do for the energy transfer in that relationship. And that will be an indication that you have gained a certain degree of mastery of this male-female principle. If you're always yielding, then you're still being a female. And if you're always dominating, you're being a male. And, of course, if you get two people trying to dominate together, you have a huge conflict because it's not easy for both of them to be dominant. But you can go back and forth. And in fact, if you have a really great relationship, you'll even move back and forth in those roles within the relationship. And it doesn't matter who's dominating or who's yielding, because it just, where's the energy in that moment? And if the energy is in being supportive of the other person and backing them up in a yielding way, that's okay. And if the energy is taking a assertive role in something because you're the one that's able to do that, the other person will back you up and there's not so much conflict. Now you're operating in oneness. You're not operating in separateness because no one cares about who seems to be winning in the world because you're doing just what's needed. And of course, the idea that yielding is weaker than dominance is not really true. Although in our culture, people think that's true. But sometimes I make the analogy of look at the water, which is the water represents yielding. It represents the feminine principle. And water takes the shape of the container. And if you look at the Grand Canyon, you can see that the water, the yielding water, has made its way through the Grand Canyon and worn it down just because it could flow around the rock. And so, in many ways, the principle of yielding is more powerful, or certainly as powerful, as the principle of, I'm using the word dominance, but I don't even know if that's the right word, assertiveness. It's probably a better word. Assertiveness, and that we're in this world to gain experiences, to learn how to integrate these energies. When we start looking at our life as a series of lifetimes, and thousands of lifetimes perhaps, and this is one of many, and that that the real goal here in life, it's only the goal if you assume it to be the goal. Of course, people have all free will, so if their goal is other than this, this doesn't mean this should be their goal. But if you're on a spiritual path, the goal is to expand your hologram. And experience is one of those things that helps you expand your hologram. Making mistakes helps you expand your hologram. Finding, like being like the water and finding where it'll flow, going this way, that way, the other way, until it finds a path. Being spiritual does not mean arriving somewhere and saying, I have arrived and now I'm going to bring God to everybody. Being spiritual is always about flow. It's always about et cetera. It's always about next. So there's nothing that you could accomplish and say you're finished. Although sometimes we could look at people and think, they've got it. They've arrived. Nobody's arrived. If they think they've arrived, they've stopped their flow. They've stopped their growth. Because life is flow. And when you're stuck, and many people get stuck, I have been stuck, I understand what it feels like to be stuck, and you say, what do I do? All the doors seem closed. What do I do? What do I do? Find a way to be of service, even in a small way. I heard somebody make a recommendation for people who are looking for a job, and I thought this was an excellent recommendation because, of course, right now, the economy is crashing. Certain people who are dependent on certain structures to get, you know, for income are finding those structures are not there to give them a job. And they keep trying to find a job in the same structure that they've always had because they're an accountant or they're this. And so they need to find, they've trained for that. Well, it's probably wiser to say, where is there a need? There is a need. There's always going to be a need. People have needs. And look for where the need is. And when you fulfill a need, you'll have a job. And maybe you have to expand your idea of yourself, your concept of yourself. Well, this one guy made a recommendation, and he said, if you need a job and you're looking for a job, look for the job an hour a day and spend the rest of the day volunteering at different places. And do that every day, and you'll find a job. And now, I haven't tried that, or I haven't known anyone to try that, but I can see the wisdom of it. Because, you see, looking for a job is always coming from lack. I don't have a job. I don't have money. I need something. Doesn't somebody want me? And it was like that repetitive pattern I was talking about earlier, where I was repeating a pattern where I was pushing people away, and it was my own subconscious pattern that started with my father who rejected me. And so now I would say all of us, or most of us on some level, have some pattern of something like that somewhere. And it's like a rock inside you that keeps you compressed. And being of service softens that rock. You end up say, going somewhere, you volunteer in Skid Row to serve Thanksgiving dinners, you meet all these other people, you're in a high flow. Everyone's in a high flow. And you meet people in a circumstance where you're outside of your pattern. And you have a high connection with those other people. And then you casually mention, I'm looking for a job, and someone says, hey, I know somebody that needs somebody. And you've broken your pattern because you got into a flow. You can go into an old age home or a retirement home and help the old people there. Help them write letters. Talk to them. You know, find ways to really be needed of service. Because when you are really needed, and being really needed is not like being codependency, okay? Codependency is an exchange. I do this for you, you do this for me, you satisfy my needs, I satisfy your needs. No, being really needed makes you valued. And when you're valued, something comes up inside you that is an open heart. It's an opening of your energies. It's a beginning of flowing. And flowing starts moving the energies in your hologram. And as you move the energies in the hologram, you start creating synchronicities or chance encounters. You can't do that very easily when you're contracted. You can't do it. You've got to get a flow going. And having money doesn't create... The flow creates the money. The flow creates the opportunity. You know, when I first started doing these calls, it was a little bit scary. I said, I don't want to get trapped in a role. I don't want to have to be something for someone else. I want to be authentic, and I want to be who I am. And the fact that I'm talking or communicating to these sources that are such huge holograms, thinking about how can I possibly be worthy of that? How can I possibly do a good job of that? And just over and over again, I said, well, this is an experiment. And, you know, I showed up on these Monday calls. I'm the last guy to like commitments. And I made a commitment. I'm going to just show up on this Monday call and keep showing up, and we'll see what happens. Those of you who are on Message a Day probably notice that I don't even like to tell people to listen to these calls because I'm afraid, geez, they're going to have some expectation of me that I may not be able to meet. I usually say, listen to the Matthew call on Wednesday. And, you know, I'm getting over having the confidence to just say, I'm just going to invite everybody and I'll just, whatever happens, happens. As long as I can say whatever happens, happens, and I don't feel I have to meet up with someone else's expectation, then I can be me. As soon as I start worrying about meeting your expectation, then I blow it. I then become trapped by my own need for your approval, and I can't be authentic. And so we are all facing those things every day with every person. Can you be authentic? Can you be honest? Can you say what you really feel? Are you afraid if you said it, they would reject you? My take is it's better to say it and have them reject you than be inauthentic. You know, if this call doesn't resonate with someone, they can just not come back. Because if I try to please you, I'll blow it. And I know the more I don't try to please you, the more you'll probably find value in it. And now, I kept saying you were going to do it. Terry, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. I'm here.
Are they wanting to say anything? Are they there?
There's been a few. They've come in, dodged in and out a couple times here. But it's so fast. Like it's not in my memory field. So, like, it's there and it's gone.
I think I'm going to say, what am I going to say? And suddenly we got, like, 4 minutes. And the time went really fast. And I don't even remember what I said. So that's a sign that I'm getting into the zone and that you guys are getting into the zone with me. Because while I'm talking, I know this is happening. They do pay attention. They, meaning the higher part of me, or me, me or you, we're all soup of energy. And, you know, it gets differentiated by calling it these names. And, you know, I can feel when I stop talking. See, the way you can tell, I can tell that the interlinking is present, the blending is present, is that I stop talking. And the energy doesn't stop. Why don't I just ask them to just share space with us all for a couple of minutes? I want to say something. They can. And if they don't, they can just share space. And we can feel that expansion of our hologram. And the way we grow is by feeling an expanded hologram. That becomes a reference point. Remember. And we established that just by the time we spent together. So I'm going to shut up, and if they want to say anything, I'll let them take the floor. We only have, though, a few minutes. Let's see. We have 2 minutes. We could probably go for 3 minutes before Seth will cut me off.
We greet you in the love light of the one infinite creator. We are pleased to be with you today. This is Ra on with the heavily Ra part in attendance. We have gone through similar issues in our life in the third dimension. It is what provides growth toward the final growth pattern where one may observe and be aware of others and accept them into their matrix and be able to flow together to create a strong bond, but yet a freedom where one's needs are met and one may then soar and expand. Also, a grounding, a centering, supported by another or others, where one may expand and be supported from. It is a path that has twists and turns as one moves through the third density in relationships with others, and justice is one of the key things, as when someone feels they are a child of God and then they feel that they have been treated unjustly or unfairly, then resentment builds up and may then try different means to get the justice cleared. This is what we had to say about this at this juncture. We love each and every one of you, and we are pleased to be with you today. And we turn it back to the host, Winfrey.
Thank you much for being here. And it's 6:51, so we'll say goodbye to message to our friends listening on BBS Radio.